Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Trap OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that Fish Tank.
Here we go, welcome back to Fish Tank Live, presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. Seth Levitt here, live from the Casabella Design Group studios and the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel, our
That's
new
right.
home.
That's right.
And as always, I am joined by the man with the best hands in the live podcast business. He is OJ McDuffie. Juice, I hate to say it every time, but I just get a little, I get jazzed up, man, every time I hear that intro.
Yeah, you know what, though? You came out on cue this time, though, man. The last time there was some pause, some hesitation, some trepidation, all kinds of big words like mayonnaise that. You know what I mean? Before you're like, oh, I got to get this thing jumped.
I was caught up in the moment. I was caught up in the moment. Plus, yeah. I have this thing. So, like, we're using this StreamYard system, and then I also have the YouTube channel on, and it was flipping me out because I was hearing like one team, and all this stuff back and forth, and call and response, and then I realized just mute the damn YouTube channel. You idiot. So that was part of the issue.
Got it. Well, Seth, you know what? I have a hard time believing that you're somebody that couldn't handle all that going on at one time, man. Cause I see you multitask better than most, bro. So I don't know. I mean, you have like one ear can hear one thing, another ear can hear something else, man. I think, and you're still good. You bring it all together.
Sometimes, but clearly that was not one of those times. Could I use the old "it's preseason for all of us"?
Right? Nah, I think we're going to kill that one. Yeah.
Squirrely. All right. I like it. Yeah. Well, as always, we are joined by our Emmy-adjacent producer. He is the legendary Savak, rocking and rolling, headband, matching. You didn't go with the All-American headband. He's got all of his colors. You know what he's got going on right now, Juice? The orange and aqua.
Yes, sir.
That's what he's got.
It's the aqua and orange is what it is.
No, but if you start from the top.
Nah, don't matter where you start. It's where you finish, baby. It's not where you start. It's where you finish, Big Seth.
Fair enough. Well, and I don't know where Chad Van Horn is. We're not sure. Maybe he'll pop up here, or maybe we just won't see him today. But since we are in his house.
Shift. I think he's on shift right now.
Really? Changing diapers.
He's got a long
changing
day, diapers. He's on shift right now, bro. So
yeah, I was like, did you say shift or did you say – I didn't hear the ding. So I was like, okay.
Well, he missed my – I already said one already. So he don't even he's terrible, man. Savak is terrible.
What did you
already,
say?
I already said one already.
What did you say?
I mean? I even gave you the cue, like, ding, but nah. You,
I didn't hear it.
Up, Savak.
There you go. That
was bad. That was bad.
Give him one and a half. Well, since we are in his backyard, like we cut through his backyard, you know, if you're trying to get to your friend's house and you hop the fence and cut through somebody's backyard, kind of disrespectful. We make sure that we aren't disrespectful. We are joined today by Mike Oliva of Dolphins Talk, since we are on the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel. That's Mike, good to have you back, man.
Always fun to be here. Wednesday night, have some laughs, talk some football, as it's about to get real busy for the Dolphins here next week or so.
Yeah. Yeah,
hey, Big Seth, you talk about jumping. I did that growing up, man. You know, running through backyards, jumping through over fences and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, as long as Mike doesn't have a big dog back there.
No dogs.
You know what I mean? When you don't know they got a big dog, then that we good then, bro. You know what I mean? We'll jump in his backyard all day, swim in his pool, jump on his swing, do all that stuff, man. You know?
So I used to do that, but then when people did it in my yard, my stepdad did not like it. He would run outside and start cussing people out, man. He'd try and chase people. And I think that just eggs them on.
Right. Well, nobody's coming to my yard, man. I had big uncles, cousins, you know what I mean? And you come in our yard, it could be a problem. I'm an only child, but I didn't grow up that way. I promise that.
Too good. Well, you know, here we are, March 4th, and you would think there's no Dolphins news, but there's plenty of Dolphins news where at least there are topics. There are things to discuss with the Miami Dolphins. Not always my favorite things to discuss.
Right.
But there are things that we need to get out in the open here and chop up a little bit. I'll probably sit back, especially when we start talking about people's money, because once Gene Atkins said, get your hands out of my pocket, Juice, I think I've stayed out of there ever since that. I don't want to have suffer the fate of Jason Cole. But before we get into any of that, speaking of money, how about the fact that Stephen Ross carves out 1%? Listen, you know what I'll do? You want a piece of my team? I'll give you 1%.
Right.
At a valuation of $12.5 billion with a B. He bought the team for $1 billion. $12.5 billion with a B dollars. He sells 1% of the Miami Dolphins. Were you guys as shocked as I was?
$125 million
in ownership.
Somebody just had that just sitting around, Big Seth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, take care of Tua's contract. All that dead money. Yeah, you know what? You take your money too. I just made it back. We're good.
Right.
Lin Bin is the Chinese billionaire who now is a 1% owner. So I wonder, like, you know, we've heard the Mark Anthony's and the Fergie and the Williams sisters. Like, do they really have, I wonder what percentage of the Dolphins they have. And did they just get a major come up when they saw the fact that 1% now just sold for 125 mil.
Well, they got in when he got it for a bill, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So their 1% combined is like, so do that math and carry the one, Big Seth. So that means they got in for, they didn't have 100 in the bank, did they?
I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. I have no idea what they have, what they had. I don't even know if they paid for it. You know, at that point in time when Mr. Ross bought the team, the orange carpet, that, you know, he wanted to bring sizzle. He wanted it to feel like Miami. And so having these celebrity minority owners was part of the sexy that he was bringing back to South Florida. And so I don't know what the deals were.
You care about though in that situation is, you know, what percentage do I have and what it is, and then as you see that go 12 times more than what he got it for, I'm watching my money grow too, right?
I don't know what any of that means, but I am really curious. Eye-opening numbers, and for a team that has the longest streak of not winning a playoff game in all of the National Football League. Now, it includes the stadium, which obviously world-class, you know, event facility. It includes Formula One. So, I mean, I think people are buying into that as much, if not more, than
the whole big entity, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think for someone like him too, yeah, but for someone like him, he's got his foot in the door. So if there's a day where even if it's not Mr. Ross, maybe, you know, after he – is not here anymore, and that family puts it for sale, you know, he's got 1%. He can be like, hold on, guys, before you put this out there, talk to me. Because this guy's got – this guy worked on Internet Explorer. He, like, invented – you know how much money this guy's probably got? Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
I was all over Internet Explorer.
Exactly. It could be a long-term play. Now, short-term, you're going to make money off this. Even at 1%, you're going to make money off this. Long-term, because I got my foot in the door for an NFL team, possibly, maybe someday.
Right. You know, and I don't – obviously, we don't see any teams going down in value, probably ever. They're just going to get richer.
Not in the National Football League.
And no. I think the Seattle Seahawks are just chomping at the bit, seeing our evaluation and what they can do, because they're obviously their team is on the market right now too. So I think it's that's why so many people want to get in, like Mike's talking about. So many people want to get into the NFL ownership business. That network right there is tight knit. They're making a ton of money. Hell, if your commissioner makes, what does Roger make? Almost $50 million a year.
Makes more than any player. It makes more than any player, I'll tell you that.
There's exactly. No salary cap for commissioner.
No salary cap for him, man, and the owners love him. So I just tells you how much everybody else is making. Of course, we'll get into that, the salary cap stuff in a minute, man. But I'm saying, it's just printing money, man. It really is just printing money. They thought they'd have some hiccups along the way, but these teams and, they just keep getting reevaluated, and they're just making more and more and more money. And tell you what, man, the fans that say they, they're boycotting football, I can't tell.
Nobody boycotting football.
Nobody's boycotting football. It isn't even close. There's the National Football League, at least in this country, and then there's really everybody else. And that's just not us being meatheads sitting here because we love our Miami Dolphins and we're just saying that and pounding our chest. Go look at the numbers. Just go look at the TV numbers for National Football League games and every other sport. And it's laughable. It's laughable.
Look at the TV deals. They have a chance to opt out. Now, you would say, why would you opt out? They got the best deal ever. Why? Because there's more networks. There's more platforms now. They're going to opt out, I think, next year. And they're going to get so much money when you throw in Netflix might want a package, or Amazon might want more, or YouTube might want a certain, there's going to be nobody opts out of their TV deals because you sign up for 9-10 years and you get a ton of money. They're opting out because they're like, yeah, we can get more.
Some more.
And they're going to opt out and get more, which is insane. And then they're playing games overseas. Why? Because they've tapped out every penny in America. Let's just play games in Madrid. We'll play games in South America. We'll play a game on a Wednesday at 9 a.m. Who cares? People will watch. And they'll play games anywhere for a buck.
Yeah, I was going to say, and what those countries are paying to have the National Football League bring, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So since we're on the topic of money, which has not been my favorite topic today, but since we are on the topic of money, Juice, you heard something on the Dolphins Talk Network this week.
Yes.
And you thought it would be something we needed to bring to the show tonight.
Absolutely, man. I listen to Mike a lot, Mike Oliva a lot, man. And just on Sunday, I was sitting there listening to, his podcast and listening to what he's talking about, bro. And it was very intriguing to me what he was talking about with the additional money that's being added to the salary cap and how the Dolphins were below it, that were in trouble with it within the salary cap. And then how we could kind of trim the fat to get in compliance by next Tuesday, Mike, I think it is.
The 11th at 4 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah. So that'd be next. So that'd be 10th or next whatever Wednesday. It is. Wednesday, next Wednesday. And so Mike, why don't you take it from here, man, and tell us how we can be compliant, and what do you think some of the moves the Dolphins could, should, or probably will make moving forward?
Okay, so right now they are salary cap compliant because they announced the cap over a week ago, I think like 10 days ago, and it was like $301.2 million. So right now they are $770,000 under the cap. They're compliant. Now, we all know, you ain't buying a bag of peanuts in the NFL for $770,000. You ain't signing nobody for that kind of money because that's not a lot, but they are compliant. And there's a couple easy, and I say easy because it ain't me, easy moves they can make to open up salary cap space. Number one would be if they cut Jason Sanders, that opens up roughly $4 million. Now, Jason Sanders is great, but Riley Patterson was pretty dang good last year.
Yeah.
And, he's far cheaper than someone like Jason Sanders. And I think that's probably a move where, as much as you like Sanders, you can get the same type of production for less money. So I think Jason Sanders would probably be someone who in the next few days or a week or so might not be on his team anymore. The next one, because he's a great guy and everyone loves him, especially off the field in the community, is fullback Alec Ingold, who, if they move on, that's $3 million. I know, Seth.
We can save the $3 million.
I'll let you say your piece. I know it's $3 million for a team that's got no cap space, though, that's that can sign a couple other guys. And
right,
it's not that fullbacks aren't important, but you know, when you got like nobody in your secondary,
Mike, how many fullbacks are there in the league? How many fullbacks are in the league?
There's like three. Right. I think so us, the Ravens, and San Francisco. That's about it.
But they're important in this offense. They're important.
They are.
Well, the old offense, they were important.
Well, but it's Bobby Slott. I mean, it's ultimately the same tree.
He better not be.
It's
Slott's still asleep over there, man.
It's the same.
Let me ask you this. Could you play Julian Hill as an H-back sometimes and have him be your fullback?
No.
Or someone like that? Maybe not Hill exactly, but
you can't come in here talking about wanting guys that love football and having the right guys in the room and culture and all of that. I mean, Alec Ingold is as important in that locker room as he is on the field.
Yeah.
$3 million.
Big Seth, and they cut my ass. Don't give me that.
For $3 million. Someone said my name three times, so I've appeared. Welcome, Sam.
Beetlejuice.
too good. Yeah, I just saw.
I understand what you're saying. I totally understand. We saw them do this with
Andrew Van Ginkle a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And you got a good player who still has miles left on, right? Still has treads on the tires and is as important in the locker room as he is on the field. And I think they felt the loss significantly.
That's an edge rusher compared to a fullback, I would
say.
Thank
you. Though. Go ahead. Yeah, Mike. Continue, Mike.
Please. That's what I, and not that fullbacks aren't important, but again, first off, we can all blame Chris Greer for this at the end of the day, okay? He put us in this mess. Right. This ain't John Eric Sullivan's fault. This ain't my fault. I'm just a messenger. This is who some of the guys who are probably likely cuts. I'm with you, Seth, in a perfect world, because I think Achane was so great last year. A big part of it was Alec Ingold. But when you have $770,000 under the cap, you got to make some tough decisions, and I think fullback might be one. Now, we can debate whether he should or shouldn't.
I think the tough decision is to keep him, Mike. That's the tough decision.
Well, okay. Well, then we got to let some other people go. And here's another name that might not be popular, but I think might be let go, is linebacker Tyrell Dotson, which opens up roughly another $3 million. Tyrell was great last year. He's been great since he's been in Miami. But again, linebackers, you're in nickel so much because it's a pass-happy league. You're always in, you know, these, you know, lots of secondary players on the field. Do you need to pay Tyrell Dotson $3 million when you have nobody in your secondary right now? Right. I think he's a name. They're probably going to trade Minka. Now, if they trade him now, they can take that one up to the draft because they probably want to wait to see what the offers are. But that opens up $6 million. So, again, you got $6 million with Minka. Let's say Ingold for now, just for argument's sake, three. $3 million here for Tyrell, nine, that's 12. $4 million here for Sanders. You're at like 16. Again, is it the most money in the world? No, but it's at least gives you – a chance to sign a few players, even if there are a few role players, which John Eric Sullivan, I think he said in his combine interview, we're not going to go out there and spend big, but there, you know, he would like to add some role players. And I will put the caveat to the side. Malik Willis, I don't think it's going to happen, but his the reporting on this, talk about smokescreen season, is a week or two back, 30 or 35 million, maybe even 40. Now it's like, well, maybe it's 20 to 25. Like if his number comes down to a point where they can like, we can make this happen. I think they're going to want this salary cap space. And I'm sorry, Alec Ingold ain't going to stop them from getting Malik Willis when it's all said and done.
Then restructure him. You can't get rid of him.
They could restructure him.
That's got to be part of a lot of the deals too, right, Mike, that we got to restructure.
I think
guys.
Jordan Brooks could get an extension, lower his cap number. Aaron Brewer could get an extension, lower his cap number. Achane could get an extension. His cap number is so small because he's on a rookie deal, but it might lower it some, or it might not even touch it, but they could, you know, pay him now and lock him up long-term. So, yes, extensions. Zach Sealer is someone who could get one as well, lower his cap number. I think they want to give one with Austin Jackson. He has no incentive to do it, though, but I don't think they want to cut him because they can't cut everybody. So right. Austin Jackson's going to be an interesting one. They could restructure.
I would toss him before I tossed Ingold.
Well, I'm with you there. And
one guy shows up and plays.
If they cut, if he was a post June 1st cut, they would save $11 million, which is substantial. The problem is you're only allowed two. One of them is going to be the quarterback. We all know it. And Chubb, they haven't announced it yet. If they ever could find a way to trade Tua, then your two post June 1st would be Chubb, which opens up like 20, and Austin Jackson, which then opens up 11. Not till June, but that's big money. You can take it the next year, even into the, you know, all that stuff. Since you're only allowed two, I don't think they'll do it with Austin Jackson. And the Chubb one, if they cut him now, pre-June 1st, opens up $7 million. If you do a post-June 1st, opens up like 20. That's why they haven't said anything yet, because I think they kind of hope if someone will trade for Tua, then we can do him and Austin Jackson post-June 1st. But I don't know if that's going to happen. So I think Chubb will be post-June 1st, and I think Austin Jackson is going to be here for one more year.
One more year.
Seth, although, right, how much will he play in that one year is a different story. But he's going to be under contract for one more year.
So, Bubba, it's a great question. Why make all these cuts just to sign Willis? Like, I hear what you're saying.
Because you can restructure that deal. Because you can structure that deal any way you want to push the big cap hit to year two, where you will have some salary cap space.
Right. Yeah.
There's ways to get creative. I'm not saying they're going to sign Willis. I actually think they won't. I think they're going to make a push for him. But I think when all's said and done, they won't.
Well, we're going to get into the quarterbacks in a second, but I think the overarching theme here is that there's a name that we heard a lot this offseason, and we heard this name as part of the core structure that would be leadership in this team. We heard this name as somebody that was a part of the interview process, and I'm not talking about Troy Aikman. I'm talking about Brandon Shore. Mm. And this, all of the things that you're discussing, like this is the time for him to make his money, right? You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. There were a lot of irresponsible deals that we've talked about over the last few. Chad, oh my God, I just can't with Sam. I love it. So there were a lot of interesting things that happened with these contracts, and it just seems like all the blame has gone to, you know, the general manager and the former head coach. And so Brandon, I guess, had to sharpen pencils and figure out how to do the things that those guys wanted to do is right. What we can, I guess, kind of take away from that. But these suggestions that you're making, Mike, this is his time to get that figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is why he's here, and this is why he's in this role. And I think he got a little bit of a promotion with this new reorg, so he has more of a voice, I would say. I know how much, we don't know, but he probably does have a voice to maybe like put the brakes on if he sees something that's not like wise. But I think these guys, from what they say, they're both from the Green Bay Packers. That team has never thrown around money. Like, they will for a Reggie White or a Micah Parsons every now and then, but outside of that, it's gotta be a big, outside of that, they're pretty much draft and sign your own. They don't go out there and spend money in March like all these other teams do, or like we have. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. It's just getting through this next year or two to flush out the bad contracts to get to a spot where it's like, we're in a healthy spot. Now we can operate like a normal football organization type of deal.
You know, Big Seth,
it's going to take a little bit of pain. It's going to take a little pain.
Yeah, it stinks that Big Seth, that we don't get any money for your boy Liam, man. I know you were depressed all week about Liam being – you know what I mean? I know that's your boy and everything, man. But,
yeah.
You know, tell us a little bit about how you're feeling about your boy Liam not coming back to be.
Well, I came around on this.
Since you like to do it, you know, in the orange and aqua, Liam coming back in the orange and aqua, not coming back.
Well, I just have to guess that Liam is just not healthy enough to play, right? I mean, that's he didn't play all last year. And that guy fought through a lot. He was a warrior. I know he was definitely a favorite of fans when they were looking for someone to, you know, he had a bullseye on his back, and there's the classic meme of him just leaning forward and the whole deal. I hate to say it, you got more out of him than you did some other people that played on that offensive line. And 2 years ago,
you got more snaps out of him. I don't know if you got more out of him. You got more snaps out of him. Come on, Big Seth.
When he had to play, was it 2023? They don't make the playoffs without Liam, right? Because that's when Connor goes down. Liam had never taken a snap as a center in his entire life. And, you know, he survived. And so did the Dolphins.
I'm going to tell you guys this. Big Seth's been like melancholy.
I know. You got to tell long. Me.
Melancholy.
Yeah. It's all been about Liam, y'all, man. It's been about
I'll say Liam this, too. It ain't just Seth. It ain't just Seth. Because last year when they re-signed him, And, you know, I was shocked, actually. I was absolutely floored they actually re-signed him. There's a lot of people in the media going, you know what, he's a good backup. He can play all five spots. Gee, he plays them all badly. You don't play any of them any good. Like, I don't care if you can play all five. He couldn't play. The reason he moved around so much because he couldn't find one spot where he excelled. I understand 2023, he stepped in at center in a pinch, and he held his own. But, you know, outside of that, what, month? I mean, his time in Miami is, you know, not going to be remembered fondly.
No, I mean, he's unfortunately going to be in that Jesse Davis category, I think. You know, that's where he is. And I say it a little facetiously, but
I know.
At least he showed up to play. I cannot stand.
I will say that's true.
You had a guard that you signed for whatever, the prize of free agency last year, and he played three flipping snaps and never saw the field again. And, you know, we saw what Dave Hyde reported about his injury. He never had a surgery, you know, a pectoral strain, and you can't get on the field for the rest of the season. You know,
Big Seth, I mean, I tore my pec, you know what I mean? And excuse my French, and get ready. It was hard for me to wipe my ass with it.
But you tore it. He didn't tear it.
Well, it's got to be some type of slight tear or something. Maybe.
You never heard the word tear.
Week 8 or 9.
But if it's already strained, you know, one little push.
He made a business decision, like, I don't need to go back out there on this team. Yeah.
Yeah, he made a business decision real early.
He made a South Beach decision.
Yeah. That's my point.
I tried to tell y'all, don't bring these dudes down here to South Florida on South Beach with a pocket full of money. You know what I mean? It's too much.
But that is my point, is that you didn't have that issue with Liam.
Yeah.
That's all.
Needs to relocate.
If you could take Liam's heart, take Liam's heart and put it in
Toronto Armstead?
Him, or even someone like Austin Jackson's body, you'd have a great player. Because Austin Jackson is a guy who's just never on the field either. I mean, nice guy, but.
Well, that's the thing about it, though. That's the thing about it. Some guys get over on heart. Some guys get over on talent. Some guys got both. Those are probably your best players ever. You know what I mean? But it's hard for some guys that have all that in them. They become great players, man. You know what I mean? So, you know, the fact that Liam has heart, fuck that heart.
Yeah. What happened, Juice?
I love Liam, but I need talent on the field.
I hear you. You got to tell me. I'm not crying. He's gone.
I am not dying on the Liam sword, okay? So I think we're blowing this out of proportion. I'm just saying that I am more offended by someone who's 26, 27 years old and in tip-top shape and a supreme athlete, and they can't stay on the damn field. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
There's a good question that came up, and I'll ask all you guys this, and my guys from Dad's Figure It Out, I think it's Miguel, A-Chan, the A-Chan situation alone, like, you know, there's all kinds of rumors about possible trade or re-up, Mike, Seth, Savak, you know. A-Chan was our MVP last year.
Yep.
You know? Everybody can argue Jordan Brooks on the defense side, but A-Chan was our MVP last year. If the right situation happens, what do we do about an A-Chan situation if we get a great offer for it?
If it's a first-round pick, I'd be tough to say no. Not that I don't like A-Chan. I love A-Chan. We all love A-Chan.
Love him.
But here's the deal. You also have to factor in, for a running back, he's a smaller size guy. And if you give him a 3 or 4 year type extension, probably 4, will he hold up over the 4 years? Like, Chris Greer in the past would have probably just made him the highest running back in the league. And then, you know, 6 months later, he's hurt. It's like, you got to think this stuff through. And they have options with him. Now, look, if you don't give him an extension, he's going to show up for camp, but he ain't going to participate because his agent is going to tell him, you ain't stepping on that field until you get a new deal because your final year of his deal. They can play hardball with him and make him show it one more year. I don't know if John Arisova wants to do that, though. Or they can give him an extension now that's, you know, not outrageous maybe, but it's fair. I think that's what will happen. But John Arisova said at the combine, he was so transparent. It was so refreshing. He said, we're not looking to trade Waddle or A-Chan, but if you send me an offer I like, I was like, he wouldn't even slam the door on it. So I think a team, they just traded this week. Houston was a team I thought might be interested, but they just traded with the Lions for running back. If there's a team who wants him and has a first-round pick, I'm not going to, you know, hand him away for nothing. But a first round pick is a first round pick. You have to, and plus we got Jalen Wright, who was pretty good at the end of last year. Ollie Gordon for a rookie was pretty good. That's the one area we got a little bit of depth, actually. So you have to consider it, but it's got to be a fair deal.
Yeah. And speaking of Ollie Gordon, real quick, Big Seth, I didn't realize how big that dude was, man. You know, at the Dolphin Cancer Challenge this weekend, he looked like a linebacker, man. I mean, that's a big cat right there, bro. It's amazing because he was standing beside Terry Kirby, who was a big running back in the day. He was a little bit bigger than Terry was.
Really? He's bigger than TK?
You know what I mean? Yeah, he was like a little, like slightly taller, a little bit bigger than TK.
And he hooped?
And I was like, hey, we can all hoop, man.
Not everybody.
He might not have any handles, but I'm sure he can, you know, drive it. Everybody can dunk. Everybody in the league can dunk. I'm going to tell everybody that right now. Everybody on a football team can dunk.
Riley Patterson?
Yeah, absolutely. He's got hops.
Okay.
He got the legs. He's got to have hops, right?
Yeah. Fair. Fair good point.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. But yeah, but the whole A-Chan thing, man, is just fascinating. You know, we have to build from somewhere on this team, right? We have to build somewhere on this team. And I think that A-Chan has done. But Mike, my thing too about A-Chan is that if we don't do it now, and he has another season, it's going to cost us too much next year. It's going to cost a lot more if he balls out the way from balling out.
Yeah. And I think I think James Cook with the Bills got like 4 years, $48 million, $30 million fully guaranteed, something like that. Off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly. But so he's probably looking at something like that or something in the neighborhood of that because he's like the same type of player, I would say, as James Cook. So if it's that, I think they'll pay him. But again, you know, they said, and not these people, we know that, with Laramie Tunsil. We're not trading Tunsil. We're not trading Tunsil. But if a team keeps calling and keeps up on their offer, you will get to the point where, like,
the right deal, for sure. I mean, if it is a just silly deal that's in your favor, then I get it. And I understand that this is a team that really is starting over, whether people want to use rebuild, retool, whatever. They're starting over and trying to undo the damage that is done. The damage that gave them the opportunity of a lifetime, right? For them to get their dream job.
Yeah.
So, but I like that he used the term building blocks. Like there's certain players you can't talk about. We want to, draft guys and then build our own. You can't do that and then get rid of a guy who's that young and that talented and that explosive and that unique in the league. I just don't see how
unless your game is going to be about guys like Jalen Wright and Ollie Gordon, a big back system. We don't know. You say, I know Slowick's got, you know, the ties with Mike, but you don't know what type. We don't know what he's going to be running and what kind of – I bet it won't be all that quick stuff. I changed that, Slovak. It won't be all that quick, all the time stuff that we've run to protect Tua and get the ball. We're going to find ways to get it to our guys quick. But there's going to be some situations down the field, smash. These guys want to play smash-mouth football. I think that's what we're looking at with half and where we want to, you know, play football for the Dolphins moving forward. And I think that's going to be some big guys downhill, especially when it comes to, like, you know, November, December, hopefully into January. You know, it might be more of a big back offense. Who knows? We'll see. I'll be out there for some of those events, the OTAs, when they allow me. You know, well, let's talk about that real quick. They don't let me out there anymore because I'm part of the media.
Yeah.
So, I'm not. I had carte blanche, man. So this might be my last week on the show, y'all. I might be.
Wait a second. You're gonna drop the fish tank
just like go to OTAs.
You spent your whole career not wanting to be at OTAs, and now you're going to drop the fish tank.
Well, now he can sit in the shade and have a drink while he's watching it. He ain't got to be out there running around.
Whatever. Bump that. They need to – don't get me started.
I would never get me started.
So, all right. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room. You addressed it earlier, Mike. We talked about the quarterback position. So Adam Schefter reports that the Dolphins will probably, in quotes, probably release Tua by this time next week. And, you know, it's I think everybody just – it's kind of inevitable that it's not a matter of if but when, right? But this time next week – is there a time for reflection? Do we save it for this time next week? Is that what the show's about next week? Like, do we think about the fact that we talk about Austin Jackson? I mean, Austin Jackson and Tua are the only two people left from that draft that where you got that haul for Laramie Tunsil. And it's just, have we seen an athlete fall this far, this fast, other than Tua? Like, in, I can't even think of anybody in this market that was that beloved and at the top of his game, right? Top 100 player, led the league in passing, you know, all of those things. And here we are, and a lot of the Tua stands, right, want to get rid of him. He did a lot of things with a microphone in his hand that turned fans off. And it just was – it was shocking to me to see both from a talent perspective and just the way he was perceived by a fan base. And internally, I mean, he got benched, for crying out loud. He got flipping benched for a seventh-round draft pick. Flipping. The fall was hard and fast.
Yeah, I mean, on the field, we've seen guys who have, like, gotten to a high point and then sort of fall off the cliff. I think on the field that stuff happens. There's guys who are kind of a flash in a pan, lightning in a bottle. It happens. Off the top of my head, with this team, I can't think of one per se, but one name that came into mind in the NBA however many years ago was Jeremy Lin. Came on the scene, great for a year or two, then kind of never heard from him again. So it does happen in sports. With Tua, it was the off-the-field stuff. And it just got, with the press conferences, he fumbles a snap, he's blaming. You try to do it. Ain't so easy when you're sitting at home potato having chips, your baby. Chips. He's going after the fans. Yeah. Then he's complaining this past year about the home fans. It was too loud. He's blaming the fans. They can't run their offense at home. Well, maybe if he didn't stink, they wouldn't be booing you so much. I don't know. There's that aspect of it. He threw teammates under the bus, had to walk it back at times. So some guys aren't showing up for meetings on time still. It's like, that's where I think he lost even his diehard fans. It's not so much with the play. And even what I thought, what he did, the one thing I thought that really rubbed me the wrong way, I know he and Brian Flores did not get along, and that whole thing was just ugly. But when Flores left and he went on the Le Batard show and just ripped him, it's like, it's over, he's gone, you won the battle, why are you doing this? It didn't need to be done. It's like stuff like that off the field kind of showed his warts a little bit, and some fans, it took longer to get there, but that's where it's like, okay, if you're not going to perform on the field, we don't need to put up with the stuff off the field.
And I think for Tua, honestly, you know, he showed a lot of amazing promise, and I think once people figured out, you know, Mike's offense, he became ineffective. But Tua's injuries, I'll say this, Tua's injuries really, really slowed him down more than he was already, you know, a slow quarterback. Now, his mind at times was very good. You know, he read defense well. His anticipation was incredible. But then when that was gone, we already know he was immobile. Then that means that he has what superpower did Tua have after that? He had no, you know, his ability to read defense, look them off, no looks, you know, all this stuff. That was his superpower, because his arm wasn't the strongest. His mobility wasn't the best. But once he lost all that, then he had nothing left, man. And I think that's just an accumulation of all that was going on with him. Mentally, you know, the head injuries possibly, his body was breaking down, the hip, everything that was going on for him. That's why, you know, I think the decline was so swift with Tua. And I think, honestly, and I don't know this for a fact, I don't think he had the most productive offseason last year in terms of getting ready for this upcoming season.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, especially these guys, I don't know why they don't get it, man. Social media is a beast when it comes to putting these guys in these bad situations, on boats, partying, you know, out kicking it, all this stuff. And then you come back and things just aren't very good for your football team when you get back, you know. Our number one job, honestly, and we all know this, is to play ball. There's plenty of time to kick it. A lot of coaches say, yo, you can kick it. You can go wherever you want and do whatever you want when you retire. You know, some of these guys, you know, they want to kick it all the way up to OTAs or training camps and things like that. And I was one of those guys, but damn it, I showed up in shape all the time. I showed up ready to ball all the time. And I just love, you know, I love the game of ball. And it wasn't just about the money. You know, because I was at one point, you know, I was one of the top 10 guys that was getting paid on the team that, you know, where the team could put out insurance policies on in case you got hurt. They could put insurance policies out there to cover your contracts. But at that point, I just wanted to play ball, man. And sometimes I wonder how many of these dudes just don't love the game like they need to love the game. I think Tua loves the game. Otherwise, he would have shut it down a while ago. But I think his body, his mind, everything else is starting to decline on him a little bit. And when that happens, what do you have to lean on? And I don't think Tua has an off-speed pitch that he could throw to get people out, you know?
Yeah, great stuff, Juice. But I also want to ask, when you talk about loving the game, and for a guy who played as long as you did, and I feel like you don't get there without loving the game. And the people who don't really love it, they get exposed and you start to figure out who they are quickly. But at some point, guys love Sundays, but they start to love the process less. And they, you know, and so I don't know if it's fair to say, but it did not look like Tua was as invested in the process. And you kind of indicated that in what you were just saying in terms of his offseason and what have you. And so, you know, look, he got generationally changing money that he was paid. Is that the reason that things changed? I don't know if that's fair or not, but, you know, some of that perception is there. But I just wonder how much, yeah, I love the game. I love to compete on Sundays at 1 o'clock, but everything that it takes to be elite at that point, you know, do I still love that? And am I willing to make those sacrifices? And I don't know. I mean, you know, there's
Seth,
certainly,
you know, I say it all the time, Big Seth. You know, I say it all the time, man. There's only two fun days in football, and that's Sundays and paydays, man. You know, the rest is a beast, man. It really is, man. I mean, the off season is a hell of a grind. You know, and back in the day, you know, these dudes had other jobs. They were bankers, they were car salesmen, they were insurance salesmen. You know, now it's 24/7 when it comes to, you know, football preparation and being ready for the season. And, you know, and you have to do that in order to be able to play in a 17, coming to 18 game season, you know, the preseason with three games, hopefully your playoff season. You're looking at 20 some games. That's a grind. And if you don't prepare in the offseason all the time for that, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, man. I remember going on vacation with my boys. Like, we go to Cancun, but every day I was running and working out. There's no way in the world. We were there for 10 days, running and working out every single day. I don't care what time we got in. Don't talk about it, Seth. I don't care what time we got in from whatever club it might have been, you know, drinking Coronas loaded. You know what I mean? It was just – but at the same time, no, man, get my butt up, run every day. Get a workout in every day, because I never wanted to fall behind that. And there are a lot of guys that really take working out seriously. And, you know, I didn't like lifting, but I'll run all day, you know.
Yeah.
And some guys, you know, but I'll lift to maintain. You know, I just got to maintain, Big Seth, at my position. Some of the big guys in the trenches, they got to really lift hard, and they got to maintain strength, and they got to take in a lot of calories. You know, we see a lot of big linemen now that are half their sizes, you know, the Pouncey twins. You know, the Tim Ruddy. Look at those guys now. You see, you guys play what? You play O-line at what weight? They're a fraction of themselves right now because they had to maintain so much. Well, for most guys, man, they really go out there and, you know, they got to take that offseason serious and continue to grind in order to stay in the league for as long as you can, man. You're not going to make this kind of money anywhere else, you know what I mean, unless you're Tom Brady, you know, or to guys like that. You're not going to make this kind of money anywhere else, so – hone your craft, take care of yourselves, man, fight through it, and then, you know, show up the next season. I feel like, in my opinion, that I didn't see Tua in the best. He could have got – we needed Tua to be at least as quick as he was, and I think Tua got slower.
Yep.
You know, and sure every aspect of the game. Every aspect of the game was slower for Tua, and that hurt him last year.
And hurt not just him, but hurt the entire organization. Hurt some people who had jobs and don't have them anymore. You know, I mean, all of that, right? All of that was tied to it. And that's the kind of the ebb and flow of a franchise. That's why they're called franchise quarterbacks, because so much is resting on their shoulders. So, yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. What do you guys make of – I probably shouldn't even bring this up. The non-birthday wish.
That's my – I tried to tell y'all.
All right, yeah, we'll leave it there. Yeah.
I got a good one. I did research. All right.
We'll say.
Somebody asked real quick. Then. You know, we're talking about Tua's injuries, and of course, I had injuries. Somebody asked about my turf toe on the chat. I saw Big Seth, and you know, obviously, that was a sore subject for me. And I'm literally and figuratively, you know, three surgeries later, and I could never get it right. And in order to go out there and play wide receiver, but now, you know, I cycle a little bit, walk a lot, can't run, can't cut, can't jump. I can't jump at all, man. I had hops. Remember when I had hops, Big Seth?
I do.
See, man, people don't believe I had hops back in the day, Mike and Savak.
I believe it. You were a first round day, pick. Man. You had to have you. I'm had sure you
couple
had hops.
Yeah, and that's gonna be part of my. I tried to tell y'all too, but anyhow, let's talk about some hops. But yeah, man. But you know, the toe is what it is, and it's you know, I'm glad. I think it helps. My injury, I think, has helped a lot of the guys that had toe injuries. I know they've all, a lot of guys are going to the same doctor I went to, stayed away from one doctor I went to about toes. Same thing they have with Bo Jackson and hips. You know, guys learned a lot from the hip injuries, from Bo Jackson's injury. And I learned from, like, my injury, and Deion Sanders had kind of same injury and so on and so forth. So, you know, nowadays, man, they're actually, especially when Mike was here, when guys are having a problem with certain things, they were getting that time off they needed. Some guys took advantage of that, and I was one of those guys that actually didn't take advantage of the situation because I was, you know, that's a whole different story. But the bottom line is the toe's fine.
There you go.
Is that good, Seth? The toe's good?
If you tell me it's good, it's good.
It's good to kick somebody in the ass, Savak. There we go.
I like the bottom line. I mean, you know, that's good. I like when you're a bottom line guy. You Penn Staters like to be bottom line guys.
Garrett said he saw my hops. You hear that? Garrett said he saw my hops.
I love it. I love it. So, and then real quick, I guess a bit of news, and I see some people are putting it in the chat, but Jonnu Smith gets released by the Steelers. That is a cap casualty. And everyone lost their damn minds when that decision was made. I think, you know, the Dolphins won that trade. That was an I tried to tell you all a while back. And there's been a lot of piling on Chris Greer, and, you know, I guess if that still makes people feel good, I'm not going to sit here and defend Liam Eichenberg and Chris Greer on the same show. But I do believe that the Dolphins won that trade because they still have, they have a tradable asset in Minkah Fitzpatrick and potentially have a guy that could bring some veteran leadership to a defense. You know, half is a right. He was defensive coordinator. He can talk that language. Maybe if he feels like he needs, if they can find a way to keep Minkah and make it worthwhile for the team, you know, they still have an opportunity to do something with the player as opposed to the decision that the Steelers just made with Jonnu. Is there a world for Jonnu Smith to come back and play for the Miami Dolphins?
No,
I mean, probably not, because they want to go younger. I mean, they want to get young, no. So I don't think so.
Exactly right. I think we'll probably address the tight end position a little bit in the draft. I like Dulcich. I hope they find a way to get him back.
They have to re-sign him, though, right? He's a UFA.
I know. I'd love to see Dulcich back. You know what I mean? I think that'd be great. I know Hayden Rucci's out looking for employment. He's got some visits. I talked to his dad the other day. I played with his dad, Ty Rucci, at Penn State. So at that position, you know, Julian Hill is probably going to still be on the roster. He might be a guy. You know, they want to run the football as a guy you want to keep involved. So they'll go out and get some guys. But Jonnu probably would not be, you know, a guy they bring back in the fold here. No.
Yeah, fair enough. So we're going to get into I tried to tell y'all. I got to run this by you guys. It has absolutely nothing to do with the Miami Dolphins or anything else. But I just saw this on Twitter. And it was, you know, these little AI videos. But it had these classic television and movie vehicles that they would show them, and then they would like turn into Transformers. And it was the General Lee, it was the A-Team van, it was the old 60s Batmobile, it was Starsky and Hutch's vehicle, it was all of that. So I want to ask you guys if you have a favorite, an all-time favorite vehicle from television or film. If you have one in the chat, drop it in here.
Seth, you know mine. I still got it here because I sent you a picture not too long ago.
I know. We got the same one. Mike and I have
the same one. And there's one of these for sale. And Seth and myself actually chatted about, let's go half. Spend half the year with you in South Florida. Half the year up here with me in Syracuse. And we'll figure it out somehow.
You know how they post those things that, like, I'm not going to brag if I win the lottery, but there will be signs and people have, like, the Castle Grayskull in the neighborhood and the whole thing. I would have a fully tricked out 18 BA Baracus van. That is mine. So Mike, Oliva, and I are on the exact same one. Page.
Love the A-Team. Love Mr. T. He was the biggest dude in the, like, he was the guy in the 80s. And I was a kid. He was the best. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's cereal. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I had to have the Mr. T cereal. What about you? What vehicle? What was your whip?
That is a tough one. So I'm kind of torn because a part of me wants to lean towards Kit from Knight Rider.
Good one.
Another one. Another part of me wants to say the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Yep. I like the DeLorean too from Back to the Future, but I really, really love Pinky's Limo, you know, and Friday After Next, man. I mean, I want to be in the ride with Pinky, you know, peeling that curb, you know what I mean? It's spilling his drink, man. You know, that's where I want to be, man. But I was really thinking of DeLorean though from Back to the Future. That right there with Michael J. Fox is pretty dope.
All right. I was just curious where you guys were at.
If I had to keep it realistic, I would take probably the – do you remember the orange Toyota Supra that Brian drove in the first Fast and Furious movie?
No, I didn't get into that series.
I'm not a big Fast and Furious guy, I have to admit. I'm just not.
Oh, yeah. We all just shut
there
it
you
down.
Go.
There she is. Oh, yeah. That's the one.
That's sweet.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You actually have it.
I like that.
So, by the way, our guy Emilio from Mexico – is it just sent me, he's got quite a collection of model car. Oh, well, you got everything. The General Lee's in there, but he's got the Flintstones vehicle
Flintstones,
the DeLorean, yes. The Ghostbuster. This is sick. The Mystery Machine with the Scooby-Doo crew. And then, of course, yeah, there's the Mach 5, and he does have the A-Team, and B.A. Baracus is standing right outside, pitying you fools.
Oh, the Mach 5. What an answer that was.
Seth, how many cars have we gotten from them, Big Seth? I got a few of them sitting around here.
So Emilio makes these custom little Matchbox cars, and he's made a few different Fish Tank ones, and they're absolutely spectacular. Thank you for sending this, brother. This is incredible. So love it. All right. Well, with that, we're going to roll into it. There's the big tease. Wait, Juice just went to go get some. We lost him?
I think you went to go find a car.
Oh, he's got one. Yeah. What we got, Juice?
I got to show you my cars, y'all. All right, so we got this bad 81. Boy.
That's nice. Little truck. Yeah.
Sir. Then we got another truck, 81.
Oh, dang, those are nice.
They're sweet.
And then
he's doing the paint job by himself on that? That's pretty cool.
That's all Emilio, man.
This bad boy right here.
Awesome.
In the
cast. Yeah, Fish Tank logo.
I do. Oh,
there we go.
Yeah,
we
I see
go.
It.
I do see
Emilio on the cast. They be hooking me up, man, my cars, bro. And then, of course, you guys, you know, I'm not even going to pull that out. My birthday present, my McLaren that I got for my birthday.
Oh, we saw it on social media.
Social media. All right. I can't bring it. You know, it's bigger than those, so I won't even bring it out.
See, I've got more too. It's like we could do an entire stream on that.
You need to grow up, Savak. You need to grow up, Savak.
Don't grow up. I think we should do one of these, but probably not now. So let's hit it with it. Let's do an I tried to tell y'all, and we'll get everybody out of here. Although we get the late night crew that comes in.
No, that's right, man. Great group, man. Saw some new names and some new people in there, man. So good stuff. One more time, big shout out to Dash Figure It Out. You know, my shirt and you guys look at that, check them out on social media, man. And you know, us dads, you know, we need to be recognized sometimes as being good guys and good people. And there's a nice little community and nonprofit that works with these guys. So it's really, really cool. And so everybody needs to check that out. But I tried to tell y'all that numbers at the combine in Indianapolis, ready, Savak, don't mean shit. It's a meaningless way to say dudes in their draws doing things that any great athlete can do and look good doing it. The 40, bench press, the shuttle, the vertical. What does all that mean? What does a fast 40 mean if you can't catch the ball? What does a fast 40 mean if you're afraid to go over the middle? What does a fast 40 mean if you can't or unwilling to block? It means jack shit. Savak. A vertical jump. I would never want to use that in a football game. You know what I mean? You get flipped on your neck bone when you go up high. Flip for real. I know you. Yes. There we go. All right.
I'm with you.
I went to the combine for the interview.
Can you hear me in the back?
That's right. Can you hear me in the back? Hello? He gets to know you, you know, as a person, engage your intellect and knowledge of the game. Hell, he's seen now they get 30 visits. So you can gauge all that extensively when you go there. So I didn't run. I didn't lift. I did not participate in the Underwear Olympics. Many guys in my class did, you know, as wide receivers, you know, Johnny Morton, Ken Shedd, Travis Hanna, Shannon Baker. They ran the fastest times, you know, 4.39 being the fastest. Who are they?
Never heard of them.
Exactly. That's my whole point.
Who the are question
they? Will always be, can you play ball? Some of the biggest freaks in the performances at the combine have been guys like Tony Mandich, Vernon Golston, Mike Mamola, Darius Heyward-Bey. I mean, really, by the way, I mean, they were all drafted ahead of Michael Crabtree and Jeremy McClellan. Could they ball? Hell no. And conversely, guys like Tom Brady, Jerry Rice, Anquan Boldin, Cooper Kupp had average to below average combines. And you can add Drew Brees and Jarvis Landry and Calais Campbell all to that list. Could all of them ball? I mean, there's no need to even answer that question. I try to play hard, play tough, play smart. I try to act like an offensive player and think like a defensive player. You know, I ran a 4.48 40 at my Penn State Pro Day. Bottom line is this. Stop making draft decisions based off the ridiculous circus in Indy. Look at the tape, see what type of people they are. Are they tough, smart, know the game, good teammates, hard workers? And to hell with the rest. I want ballers walking the Aquan Orange, not some cat that game the system through offseason training. They rarely last in this league. And I believe that Sully and Half feel the same way I do. I try to tell you.
Let's go. Juice. Nice. You ain't messing around today. Got a couple of dings in there too, man.
Dang, I was ready for the dings, man. I was trying to hold off earlier in dings so I could save some for my try to tell you.
Yeah, it didn't seem like you were trying to hold off.
I'm right about that. I'm right about
I almost
that.
Wanted to give you a ding for that who are they comment. That was cold-blooded.
That was good. That was good. All right, who's up? Are we going? Let's go Savat.
All right, yeah, I got you. Well, I know because, you know, last week Seth was getting on us. We all got a stern talking to about staying on topic because we're a Dolphins podcast.
I brought up frigging cars.
It's true. But I've been trying to tell y'all for a minute now, Miami hasn't been hiring bad coaches, at least not the last few. They've been hiring good coaches at the wrong time and then parachuting them into messy situations and expecting them to drag the whole franchise out of the chaos by sheer willpower. Now, I'm saying all this as we were, you know, sitting there imagining what the Chargers offense might look like with Jim Harbaugh hiring Mike McDaniel as his offensive coordinator and Adam freaking Gase as his pass game coordinator, two former Dolphins head coaches. But the difference now is the scope. Both of those guys now have lanes. Define roles, fewer fires to put out, and that alone should boost their effectiveness. I wanted to use the word efficacy. That one's just for you. Now let's start with Gase. The man walked into back-to-back head coaching interviews carrying a recommendation from Peyton Manning. It's not like your run-of-the-mill LinkedIn endorsement. That's the golden stamp of approval. But why did it fall apart in Miami? You can slice it a dozen different ways, but the heart of it was simple. He didn't turn Ryan Tannehill into Peyton Manning. And that was the bar. And when that didn't happen, the clock started ticking. In LA, though, he won't be calling plays. He'll be working under an OC, and that's huge because it funnels him into what he actually does well. Game planning, coverage identification, third down and red zone concepts, and situational quarterback prep. It reminds me, Kenny Still said it on the Fish Tank. Gase had them ready for everything. Every scenario, including the Miami Miracle.
Yeah.
That wasn't luck. That was prep. I mean, I think what was his quote exactly? He said that they practiced that play every Saturday from the moment Adam Gase got there until they used it in that game. So it wasn't, this is a play we refer to as a miracle. It wasn't divine intervention, it was divine preparation. Yeah. Now we're going to sidestep Flores for a second and talk about McDaniel. As the head coach in Miami, McDaniel proved he could design an elite explosive offense. And when it was humming, it was beautiful. Motion, timing, spacing, speed, but it skewed toward finesse. And when things got muddy, the short yardage, in the red zone, physical run answers, the offense didn't always have a counterpunch. Historically, though, his best work came as a lieutenant next to a strong head coach. Think Shanahan, where he could maximize a unit instead of overseeing an entire building. And the Chargers are basically recreating that environment. You add in Harbaugh's physical philosophy and Gase's situational structure, and suddenly the soft spots in Mikey's McOffense have reinforcements. Now, put simply, McDaniel's strengths, creative run-pass integration, motion, detailed game planning, and quarterback efficiency are front and center, and his weaknesses, buffered by the staff around him. Now, very briefly, Flores. Ryan Flores is a damn good coach. You don't have to agree with everything he's done or said to see that. He caught heat in Miami largely because he refused to play along. Allegedly offered $100,000 per loss and said, nope, not my team. Now that's conviction. He also fielded one of the most disciplined Dolphin squads we've seen in many years. And he told us, far more bluntly and with way fewer words than McDaniel would have used, that he didn't believe Tua was the guy. And he got buried for it. Yet in three seasons, he produced two winning years with a quarterback he very publicly didn't want. And today, he's still regarded as one of the sharpest defensive minds in the league. So let me land this plane. Seth said a couple weeks ago, Miami fans are going to be sick watching the Chargers offense cook next season. And maybe. But take a breath, Dolphins. We never could have built what LA just assembled. There's no universe where two former head coaches come back to the same organization to take lesser roles. Almost never happens. In fact, the only recent example I can that comes to mind is Vance Joseph in Denver. And hilariously enough, he was once Miami's defensive coordinator under Adam Gase. My point, same as it's been. Miami hasn't been hiring bad coaches. They've been hiring good ones at bad times, in bad situations, and asking them to perform miracles. And even Adam Gase's one that he managed to pull was not enough. And I tried to tell you.
You guys are bringing it today, and I have damn near nothing. So I'm and I'm sure Mike's going to slay it too. So I might just go run with my tail between my legs. Mike Oliva, what did you try to tell us?
All right. I've been trying to tell y'all. I don't know if John Eric Sullivan or Jeff Hafley will be successful, but this is a new day of Miami Dolphins football. They might, from what they have said so far and done, they, and just from the whole organization overall, this group might not be so dang nice anymore. They are not worried about upsetting players or hurting their feelings. And it's not just the GM. It's not just the coach. It's now carried over to the social media team. Exhibit A, the Miami Dolphins social media team didn't even wish Tua a happy birthday on Tuesday. It's a birthday greeting. I get it. The guy's going to be gone soon, but not a birthday greeting. And don't give me this, oh, it was an oversight or they didn't know. Because I did a quick glance of the Miami Dolphins Twitter and X page. These guys don't miss anything. February 18th, they wish people a happy Ramadan. February 14th, they wish people happy Valentine's Day. February 13th, they wished Dante Trader happy birthday. February 3rd, they wish Bob Greasy happy birthday. And I'm pretty sure Bob isn't even on social media. On January 27th, they wish Daniel Brunskill happy birthday. What's the big deal? He's not even under contract anymore. He's going to be a free agent. They wished Ollie Gordon happy birthday on January 15th. They wished Andrew Meyer, who didn't even play last year. They wished him a happy birthday on January 14th. Jonas Avayanea, January 13th. Richmond Webb, January 11th. On Christmas, a holiday, they wished Larry Zonka a happy birthday. Hell, I should go back to July 12th. They might have wished me a happy birthday. I don't even know. They wish everyone a happy birthday, except for Tua. And I did go back to December 2nd, because there's a former first-round pick of the Miami Dolphins who has a birthday on December 2nd. And OJ, I'm sad to announce you're in company with Tua, because they didn't wish you a happy birthday.
I know.
Birthday
I was like, you know, I know I didn't get a...
But you know who did? DolphinsTalk.com.
That's right.
DJ, a happy That's right. birthday in a tweet. Do better, Miami Dolphins. On the 2nd next year of December, I'm watching you guys wish the juice a happy birthday. But back to my point, I tried to tell y'all this was over a long time ago. When he got two head coaches and a GM fired, it was over. And some people still don't want to believe. There's some in the media saying, just put them on IR for the year. We don't have to cut them. They don't want them anymore. And there's no further proof when they wish everyone under the sun a damn near happy birthday, except for a guy who's been the starting quarterback for the past 5 or 6 years. I try to tell y'all.
Oh, my
man. Oh, man.
Hey, Mike, I'm glad you did that research too, man. Fuck them, man.
I checked. Well, since I got back to Christmas, I go, let me check juice. It's only, you know, at the start of the month. And I go, and I'm running by all these names. And Daniel Brunskill's not even under contract. He's going to be gone.
I didn't realize it was that bad, man. I mean, man, I'm starting to really dislike it. That's brilliant right there, Mike. Because now I really don't like the team anymore.
Was that the goal?
Yeah, well, it wasn't a goal, but he solidified it for me.
I mean, if they're going to do
well. Are you more upset about your birthday or Tua's?
Oh, his.
See? Don't get me started.
Come on, Juice. I'm more upset about
mine. You know it's about mine, Mike.
Of course.
I don't know what Seth. Seth's always trying to start something, man.
Sam wants to know if they wish to Lindo Mari a happy birthday, Mike. That's the question.
I don't know. I'd have to look at my list to see what it is.
A good chance they did.
There's probably a good chance they get everyone else.
I don't think I want to do one. That was too good. You guys killed it. I don't need to do one.
You got to do one.
Well, I got a half-ass
happy birthday. I want to wish him a happy birthday, too. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Oh, you guys. Well,
hopefully
all right.
We don't come in half-assing, too.
I've got a brief one for you.
Ding, all y'all.
I have a brief one, and here's the deal. I tried to tell y'all that there is no dirtier word in the National Football League than hope. And gentlemen, get out your earmuffs, because we are in hope season. From a carousel of hope that circled the NFL during a record-setting head coach's cycle, to the hope that this time will be different for our Dolphin brethren, to hoping certain players will be released, or that others will be signed, or maybe that some will get a birthday wish, hoping that your draft steal is still available at 7, or that Reuben Baines are just short enough for him to fall to 11, or just simply hoping the Miami Dolphins make throwbacks permanent. Hope springs eternal. And I'm here to tell you to stop hoping. Now, I'm not trying to be all negative nilly here, because there's a major difference between hope and belief. And belief is really what we need, but belief is earned. Belief is earned over time, and more importantly, belief is earned with results. So we need some time. Put hope on the shelf. Let's give Half, let's give Sullivan and the rest of this crew some time so that we can believe in them. So just pause for a second. Follow your offseason, build your draft boards, go listen to Drive Time, and you get all your position group breakdowns from Travis. But hope, haven't we hoped enough in South Florida? I want everyone to start treating hope the way Savak treats a profanity-filled O.J. McDuffie tirade. When you hear the word hope, Savak, what do you give them? I tried to tell y'all.
Sam's got a great comment. We got to share this comment from Sam. Hold on.
That's it. That's exactly right.
Well, you know, Big Seth, in the spirit of the late Jesse Jackson, he always said, keep hope alive, man. So I get it. I'm back on belief now. I'm going to try to believe, because I've been hoping for a long time, man.
They should get the benefit of the doubt until they shouldn't. And that's how I've sort of taken it. Like, look, Chris Greer, not to just keep piling on, he messed up more than once, so he couldn't get the benefit of the doubt the past few years. It was always, let's second guess him because there was good reason to. These guys haven't done anything yet where, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's see how this goes. In a few years, if there's reason not to give them the benefit of the doubt, then we cross that bridge when we get there. But for now, let's just see how this plays out.
Let me ask before we get out of here, let me ask you, Mike and Savak and Seth, in the last 10 years, there's had to be some season where we felt good about how we could be as a team going to the season. I thought after 23 with our offense, I thought we can be dominant, you know, and then figure out a way to make our defense work moving forward. I mean, I thought that after we were so good as an offense, I like, shit, we can be really, really good here. Thank you, Sabat. You know, moving forward with all the same pieces parts. I had the same feeling when I was at Penn State that we brought all the same pieces parts back and we collapsed this last year. But I'm saying, like, I felt pretty good going into this season for sure. Did anybody else feel the same way? I know we were beat up on defense and things like that, but for us offensively, I felt pretty good about it.
Not this year, but I'll tell you a year, though, right? Really had high hopes.
24, not 25.
Well, yeah, 24, well, also, just to go back a little ways, 2016, Adam Gase's first year – Jay Ajayi's running for 200-yard games. Landry's a beast out there. Ryan Tannehill finally played a good year up until when he got hurt late in the year. And I'm like, okay, they made the playoffs, lost to Pittsburgh with Matt Moore. Not a shock. But that next year, they said Ryan Tannehill was healthy until he got to training camp on like the third day. But if he would have been healthy, I'm like, going into that year, Jay Ajayi, Jarvis Landry, Ryan Tannehill's coming off his best year. That offensive line was pretty good then at that point. I thought that year, that like this might be a year where we can take a leap, and it never happened because we end up with Jay Cutler, and it was a whole – it just unraveled like the first or second day of camp. But that's when I really thought this franchise was really onto something because they had the power running game. They had some wide receivers. They had a quarterback who was ascending at that point a little bit. Never happened. 23 was – that was their year, honestly. They had so many injuries. Yeah. But yeah. 24, yeah. though, they lost a lot of guys after 23. Wilkins, that was tough to replace some of those guys.
Yeah, but there was, I think, well, for me, there was hope there because you just saw how explosive the offense could be.
Yeah.
And at that point, I hate to say it, I had belief that Mike McDaniel was going to figure out the next thing, just like, you know, that whole – whatever that speed motion or whatever he figured out with Tyreek and everybody started copying. And then, you know, I thought he was going to be back in the lab and figure out the next thing and that he would find a way to overcome whatever the league had done to shut down the offense. And it never, ever happened. The last time I had real hope, I would say the last time I had real hope was probably 2006. After the team won, was it six in a row to close out the season and say, you know, it's like, okay, you got Nick Saban and you got, you know, obviously JT being defensive player of the year and just thought things were maybe heading in the right direction there. Of course, you know, we all know there was a quarterback decision made there that this team is still, as we have a new Hall of Fame quarterback going in to the into Canton, there were decisions made there. But yeah, I think that one, and maybe after Ricky's first year, 2003. Yeah. You know, those were the two
years we had the run game and that defense together.
Yeah.
The ideal situation for this team, and they flubbed it up, Savak. They flubbed it up. I mean, that
what
was
fun is that?
When you had both, when you had that's the recipe right there. Great defense and a great run game. And then it really boils down to now can you have a fucking franchise quarterback in the middle of that?
Savak, where are you?
Savak, you're late on that one.
Texter. You know, if that's our problem, man. We can never get it all right at the same time. That's do we believe we can get that? I hope we can, but my belief right now is that we have to start with some of the guys we have now. We don't have a franchise quarterback anymore. We've got to figure this out. How can we get that? And that's how you win football games in this league, bro. I mean, look at some of the teams that come up short. I mean, you talk about the Seattle Seahawks who just won the Super Bowl. Look, they've got a quarterback that, honestly, people can say whatever they want, but he's won 14 games 2 years in a row. And they got a run game, and they got a great defense. The things that we're talking about. You know, you go back to Philly winning it 2 years ago. They think Jalen's a franchise quarterback, but they had a run game and a great defense. Now, when you've got a subpar quarterback, all the other shit don't matter. It don't matter. You know, you got to have somebody that at some point has to make a play. Somebody's got to make a throw. They got to run out of trouble. You know what I mean? And
third downs, you got to convert third downs. That's what it is. That's what the whole league is. Third downs. Can you convert third downs?
You got to keep us in, you know, manageable down and distances and don't turn the fucking ball over. And that's after hours, Savak.
We need a counter. Can we get a counter?
There's a way to do a counter.
We're still screaming.
Oh, you're right. All right.
We need a ticker. Anyway. All right, Savak, you can't pull up that, you know, can we do a pre-sale on my book? That book cover that you just set out there? Can that be pulled up on the screen?
Let me see.
I'm working on that now.
Oh, my God. Let me see. I can probably – hold on. Pull that up on
the screen. You got it. Please do.
Sam Marcoux's going to write the foreword to this.
Okay. Dude, that's so weird that you said that because I was in the process of preparing a tweet and that's the caption.
Here we go. You guys ready? Here it is. Let's do it. The next New York Times bestseller.
There it is. All right. We're going to do autograph copies, and you can get a pre-sale in now.
Damn.
We're taking orders.
Hey, Big Seth looking like he'd go out there and ball like right
Clark
now.
Clark Kent ripping off the shirt.
That is an old-ass photograph. But damn it, there was a better time. It was a better time.
Hey,
speaking of time, Juice, I think it's about that time.
Hey, there's no better way to end it than that right there, Big Seth. Everybody, thanks for diving in.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank.